June 30th special meeting of Chapter 10 Legislature from the Board of Students. Please join me on the pledge of allegiance. Thank you.
Here.
Mr. Shigeru is asked to be excused. Mr. Stein?
Here.
Mr. Burbank?
Here.
Ms. Chow?
Here.
Mr. Dennis?
Here.
Ms. Ferrera?
Here.
Ms. Kiefer?
Present.
Mr. Ruddy?
Here.
Ms. Nancy?
Here.
Mrs. McKee-Fedborn?
Present.
Mr. McKenna?
Present.
Mr. Proba?
Here.
Ms. Pryor? Ms. Pryor?
Here.
Ms. Robinson?
Here.
And 14 members present? Thank you. How about that? As I said, it's left the record show. We've made some adjustments tonight. What have you adjusted? We had a bit of a search trying to find a space that would accommodate the public more comfortably than our normal chambers. So I hope you're all feeling comfortable because we're a little tired here. That should be, I will tell legislators that to be recorded, to be on that tape, to be heard, you'll have to share, when it's our turn, you'll have to share these mics that are on your tables to sort of slide into each other. Pam, I'm wondering if you don't go very far, but I think that you can turn the mics up a little bit. Okay. Pat, how are you doing on here?
There's nothing coming through the speaker.
Okay. Jim here?
I think Harry is also.
Okay. All right, very good. I just want to say a quick thank you to our staff that has done a whole lot of tap dancing to make this possible. Jim, Frank, Karen Kohler, and Kathy Colbert. And Marshall Lynch, really great appreciation to all of you for working this out for all of you. Okay, we'll start with public people to the floor. I have loose lips for folks. At the end of these, if anybody else would like to speak, please raise your hand and go to the mic. 3 minute time limit. Bruce, can you? Yeah, there's another slip there. Somebody wants to pass the other slips up. 3 minute time limit. Kathy will have a sign for your time warning. Bernie Hutchins is the first speaker. So go to the lectern here. I'm sorry, Bernie, before we start, would everybody please turn off any cell phones or put them on silent? We're going to start.
Bernie Hutchins, there was a cell phone. Bernie Hutchins, 1016 Henshaw Road. The way you are taking public input at this meeting has a common fault of previous meetings. You let citizens speak, but there's no dialogue. Citizens never get any opportunity to expand or defend. Then you ask staff to speak in a dialogue, and their statements are often go unquestioned by the legislature. And of course, the public has no voice at this point. Mr. Wood and Mr. Marks tell you that this DNF is a trivial formality about finding a public purpose for the project, which they feel is already passed by definition. Let's hope they don't try to tell you this again tonight. It is much more than that, because it represents a foreclosing step against the property owner's opportunity to present a property defense. Defense against the yet unspecified parameters of the project, the results of inappropriate maps, and description failures. This is so unimportant that the New York State Legislature in 1974 revised the laws to protect the property owner. These new provisions, by the way, are being bypassed by the county. At the June 4th FNI, I said there were as many as 20 properties that were not properly notified under the revised law. Mr. Wood said that there were a few, but not as many as I claimed. In fact, following the F&I, John Lampman found 15 properties, with 89 house containing properties along the project. That's 1 in 6, not legally notified. Not excluded inadvertently, but systematically. So 1 in 6 is just a few. If Mr. Squires found that 1 in 6 taxpayers didn't send in a tax payment, would he report to you that it was just a few? Totally outside the law, Tompkins County has decided to notify the 15 property owners after the fact and offer them an opportunity to comment in writing in lieu of their actual rights. This sounds just fine to staff. At the June 4th F&I, Mr. Wood said, what would a person who was not notified have said that would have made, that would have changed anything? Indeed, what would such a person have said? So why give anyone the opportunity to speak? Well, in a 2006 memo to this legislature, and on April 20th here, in response to a question from Professor Stein, Mr. Wood expressed the opinion that the property owners had virtually no significant rights. So, is your vote here tonight just a trivial formality? No, it is the next step, an enabling step, in a process that has traditionally been oppressive and which the county has handled abysmally. In their defense, they have never worked under the 2004 law before. So that's an explanation. Although, when we are talking about a citizen's rights, they have earned an excuse, and their actions will be challenged. I'm also handing in a list of the 15 properties that were not notified.
Thank you, Bruce Levinson, and that may occur.
First of all, I'd like to thank you all for your patience. I know that you guys would just love to have this over with. I would like to try to entertain you for about 30 seconds with a very old joke about the guy who orders a custom suit from the tailor, and he goes in to have it fitted, and he says to the tailor, the left arm's too long, and the tailor says, well, if you just stand like this, it won't be so long. The guy says, I noticed the coat's too long in the back, and he says, well, if you just bend over like this, then it won't be so long. The guy says, well, I noticed the left pant leg's too long. The guy says, well, if you just put your left toe in the air, you know, and walk on your left toe, you'll be fine. So the guy looks in the mirror and says, fine. So he walks out, stool, like that. And two guys observe him. And one guy says to the other, it must be terrible to have to go through life with a deformed body like that. And the other guy says, yes, but it's a hell of a tailor who can make a suit to fit. Now, to me, that's a metaphor for the process that we've gone through. It's no doubt that the eminent domain process has been deformed. As Bernie noted, and the low point for me, was at the F&I hearing when Mr. Wood said that it probably didn't matter that the other 15 property owners didn't receive notice. After all, what would they add to the process? Now, whether or not that's legally challengeable, I'll leave to others, but it certainly is ethically dubious. And it shows a stunning lack of imagination. It may be the other 15 property owners would have supported the project as is, would have gladly sold their land. But we don't know. Where you find yourselves tonight is in a kind of ethical no man's land. And this vote tonight, what you're voting on, is the ability of the county to take people's land by force, if necessary. To take these people's land, my land, by force, if necessary. With that kind of power, the process to determine whether or not the eminent domain procedure has been legal and ethical should leave no question in anybody's mind. So this vote tonight really is a reflection of how the county wants to govern itself. And that's your responsibility. And I hope, I know you take it seriously. So I'd just like you to think about, if not the legal ramifications of a flawed process, the ethical questions involved in the process that's been followed. Thank you.
The other person I'm hearing was
do. Like you, I'd rather be somewhere else tonight. So this evening, I thank you for being here and I thank you for your attention. I want to speak first on behalf of Joseph Weissman. Then I'll reserve my second 3 minutes for the 37 property owners I represent in the Hanshaw Road neighborhood group. My comments about, and I submitted written comments, but my comments about the Roisman issue is really a complaint. And that is, I appeared before your legislature on March 16th. I submitted written comments on behalf of the Roismans, and I spoke about the process and their property. And in response to those comments, the response said in your findings, your proposed findings, well, we'll get you a new easement map which properly shows the property. Subsequent to that, Mr. Landman determines that a new easement map is not necessary, that the county's use matches the deed. Well, how convenient. That's what they've been saying all along, and that's the opposite of what we've been saying. So I set forth in my written comment tonight my legal analysis of why that's an error and why reliance upon that is really reliance upon the same theories that got us into the Cottington Road situation. So I'd ask you to take a close look at that letter and that analysis and treat these folks with respect. If you're going to acquire their property, the least that you owe them is full and complete compliance with the eminent domain procedure. Nobody wants to give up their property. Giving up a property right is repugnant to most people. But it's a lot easier to swallow if you believe that you can treat it fairly and that the proper procedure has been followed. With respect to the rest of the folks, on Hanshaw Road, the 37 property owners and citizens who formed the Hanshaw Road Neighborhood Group, I've also submitted written comments on their behalf, and some of what I'm going to say echoes what has been said to you already. And that is that there's undoubtedly a fatal flaw in the process here. Based on New York State case law and on the Cottington Road decision, the county's not obligated to acquire that part of the road which they've actually been using. Yeah, this is an interesting concept because it's not only use, but it's maintenance. Naked use alone does not cut it. It has to be, to establish the highway line, you have to define what you've been using for the public easement and what you've maintained. It's not just use. So maybe it took, maybe years ago, part of an embankment was removed in the reconstruction of the road, and nothing's been done for 30 years. Does the county have title to that or an easement on that? I don't think so. It's what you've been maintaining. There's lots of cases on this. So I think you have to be very careful about that, and that's what has led you, I think, to where you are now with the second part of the process. This is not an eminent domain public hearing tonight. You already closed that. This is trying to put a Band-Aid on a mess. And what you really need to do is stop, get the proper easement maps in front of everybody, start over, deal fairly with these people, and make the process work. Everybody will feel a lot better if they feel that the process was done correctly and fairly.
My name is Hannah Rosman. I live at 1007 Hanshaw Road. There are many issues that I could address tonight, such as the fact that the current design requires us to sacrifice a truly significant portion of our front yard and 5 fully grown spruce trees and a lilac to the project. That up to a few months ago, since I live in Cayuga Heights, I was never notified about the design and was therefore unable to have any input into it. that because of the project, it would become much more dangerous to enter and exit my driveway. And that in spite of my repeated requests, the county has failed to provide us with a revised map and restoration map as promised, leaving us completely in the dark as to how our property and yard will look like after construction. In addition, the county claims a greater right-of-way than it actually has our existing highway use that fails to match our deep boundaries and to cut it there. But bad as our situation is, I would like to raise a more general issue. From the responses we got to our and others' complaints or questions, it has become clear that there is no willingness to reconsider the design for the less invasive plan. Not out of belief that the plan could not be redesigned in a less invasive manner, but because of fear of losing the federal grant money for the project if the construction does not begin on schedule. I believe that it is fundamentally wrong to ignore legitimate questions about the damage to private property and to the community of Henshaw Road out of fear of losing federal funds or because there is no money left for redesigning. The purpose of this project is to improve the situation and not to avoid losing money and time. The money should be the means, not the end. By refusing to delay the plan and reconsider it, you will be hurting us instead of helping us. I want to make clear that we do not oppose changing the road to improve it. We only oppose having a plan implemented that fails to take into account our legitimate interests and rights when an alternative plan accomplishing the same objective is entirely feasible, and when it appears that the only reason to implement the current plan, which again we have no input in designing, is the fear of losing federal grant money. Please be our true representatives, and not let time and monetary constraints be your only agenda. Thank you.
I'm Marlene Cody and I live at 1103 Henshaw Road. I live at 1103 Henshaw Road. I'm among those 14 or 15 property owners who were not originally notified of the project and therefore did not have a chance to attend that eminent domain hearing that was held back in March. To let you know what kind of a state of confusion I'm in, I was actually out today with a partner with a tape measure trying to figure out exactly what kind of impact this proposed design is going to have on our property, because we have not been informed of anything in regard to that. I'm not even sure whether we are or are not on the quote taking list. I suppose it depends on how you define taking. I'm assuming we were not on the taking list because we were not notified of the eminent domain hearing. But then, in John Lamb's responses to the comments that Ron and I submitted to the three pages in the space, it seems that now we are, quote, on the taking list, but the only way in which we were informed of that were in John Lamb's responses to my comments, which he did not direct to me. Somebody else provided him with it. So I would simply like to add my voice to those of the others who have spoken to say that this process has been deeply flawed. I have been told that the impact on our property will be minor. It does not feel minor to me. I do believe that there is an alternative design that will have a smaller footprint, that will be more sustainable and more livable, and will serve all of the public objectives of this project. So I too ask you, please, do not let the availability of federal funding be your primary concern as you think about what is the right thing to do in this particular situation. Thank you.
Anyway, and then
Randy Grant, Wayne, I live on 201 Road Street. So first I want to talk about my cell phone address. We're just behind Rose, we're just behind Hanshaw Road. So it would be wonderful and convenient to walk on a sidewalk, to go to community corners, maybe eat an ice cream shop that would pop up there. But self-interest just doesn't trump what is right. And that's not taking somebody's land by eminent domain. It's just wrong. Simple as that. It's just wrong.
Hillary Atkins, and Bush and Rich.
Good evening, all. Thank you for this opportunity to speak. First, I'd like to know when you received our comments for the June 24th deadline from the hand-delivered notes addressing the domain row, comments from Louise, Marlene, and myself. Was it just minutes? Was it just minutes prior to this meeting? Have you read our comments? I received a reply from John Landon via a twice-forwarded notice only last night, after 6:30. I must say the response was befuddling at first, difficult to read through, though eventually I got the hang of it, scrolling back and forth through four pages of noted numbers, comment number, response number. Communications, a key factor over the years, has influenced decisions, or created a larger gulf in understandings of this issue, rolling drawn maps, to measurements and language that are not easy at times for the general public, or I should say just myself, to understand. Communications between the town legislators and those of the highway department in representing our views in the earlier meetings many years ago, I have heard through the grapevine that some of you legislators were not aware of how we, the residents of Hanshaw, felt about this project. The presentation of the project years ago had elements of selling points about building a stronger neighborhood, creating connections to each other via sidewalks down to community corners. Safety factors were illuminated, such as bike lanes and traffic calming features. Now, all of this seems to be a partial farce in lieu of how I see this project proceeding. You want this done at all costs. Neither would be damned. I understand that many of my neighbors along this 1.3-mile corridor have applauded the project. Perhaps we are not that far apart in agreement as to some of the features. Understandably, seasonal drainage is difficult. No one disputes the warped bumpiness of the Warren Hanshaw intersection and the poorly lit shoulders that are a crumbled mess of asphalt between Zach Sucker and Warren. As a parent with a daughter that uses her bike when home from college, I fully grasp the reality of safety and bike lanes. Yet I wonder how many would seriously consider walking or biking with young children along the Hanshaw, with cars moving far beyond their 30 mile per hour to upwards 50 miles per hour. None of you here are responsible for the driving habits or lack thereof of those individuals that would travel Hanshaw, yet you are poised to give the go-ahead to this project. Please think of the dangers that loom ahead. Dear vehicles at 50 miles per hour will have tragic outcomes on the road. Homeowners that can only back out of their driveway will find it harder to do so. If you do not keep the four-way stop sign, this takes away the one calming traffic feature that actually assists the flow of traffic of Warren Hanshaw. Peak hours for TCAT and school buses, employees at Cornell, workers at Cornell Tech Park, parents taking their children to the WIT, for Boise's, just one more second. Anyways, we all rely on a fair flow of traffic through that intersection. It won't be easy with a traffic light that does not have a left turn arrow. I stand here tonight with a fresh outlook and a belief that a viable improvement for Hanshaw Road can be achieved. One that keeps the overall integrity of the neighborhood, landscape features, and affords the needed resurfacing, resolves drainage concerns.
Okay, I'm the next person.
Thank you again.
Some short people.
Good evening, I'm Bruce Britton, 135 Warren Road. I'd like to start by thanking you for holding this meeting, and especially for moving it to this room, which is more comfortable for us and difficult for you. During this meeting on June 4th, the Facilities and Infrastructure Committee was told by Ed Marks that voting for this resolution to accept the determination and findings was merely an acknowledgement that Hanshaw Road serves a public purpose. I think Hanshaw is a public road, and that's a matter of fact and not something to be established by a vote. What you're really voting on is that the current design for rebuilding the road, alternative number 3B, is the best one possible, and if you will, use eminent domain procedures in order to build it. Clearly, it's not the best design. You can easily fit redesigned roads within the existing footprint. The FHWA and NYSTOP both endorse context-sensitive design, which could have been used. You've been told that it was used. If so, I've seen no evidence of that. Context-sensitive design advocates a collaborative approach involving residents in the design process. What we've seen is an adversarial, top-down, decide-announce-defend approach. Residents were told that the street would be traffic calming. There are no traffic calming elements in this plan. Context-sensitive design allows for utilizing a reduced design speed. The current design raises the design speed, widening the roadway, flattening undulations, opening a curve of the village line. Context-sensitive design urges creativity, stretching boundaries. The design that you see now is straight down the line design, no compromises. Context-sensitive design often involves going back and revisiting decisions that were made earlier in the design process, and this project simply seems to pull those together. I've also noticed that there are far too many factual errors in the resolution. I don't know who wrote it, but when you approve it, those errors become your errors. The list of comments is not complete. Not all comments have responses. Warrants for the translator was done incorrectly. I know you can do better. 20 years ago, I wouldn't have bothered to try to change a design for a county road. 10 years ago, the IGCTC initiated the Northeast Subarea Transportation Study to try to figure out what to do with transportation in the Northeast. That was a collaborative process. The county was involved. Seeing how I'm running out of time, the first recommendation of the NEST study was to adopt livability principles, and it's not time to go over those, but the key one that I want to mention is maintain and enhance the livability of hot residential areas, even if this means that commuting time for some of the further out of suburban developments may be a few minutes longer. I think that sums it up pretty well. But a better design is possible fitting within the existing footprint. I know you can do better. Time's up. Thank you.
Thank you for your time. One of the questions that we have asked, those of us on Hanshaw Road from the beginning, is who benefits from this project? And I think that there are a number of contradictions in the proposal itself. The first statement on page one recognizes that it's an urban minor arterial Hanshaw Road, that little stretch between Community Corners and Warren Road intersection, is key to the continued economic development of Northeast Tompkins County. An equal amount of space then is put to the question of safety. And I believe that the safety record is really not in question in terms of the incidence of accidents, the number of accidents. And I appreciate some of the changes made in this version when the proposal for the stoplight on Warren Road and Shaw intersection is now just a possibility. I think all of us living on that stretch realize that a stoplight system there would simply encourage speed. Even the very improvement, the county planners themselves know, typically raise speeds from 5 to 8 miles an hour. And so the whole question of safety does not seem to be congruent with the aim of economic development. And if part of the project has to do with responding to some pressure from Cornell to increase access to the airport, the distance from community corners, from the gas station at the foot of the small hill there, to the intersection of Hanshaw and Warren Road is a little over 0.6 miles. At 30 miles an hour, that takes a minute and 20 seconds. And I have no idea how the saving of a few seconds matters in the way of economic development. Another, I am one of the 14 or 15 homeowners, again, who was not notified, and we were given, delivered a letter on June 10th, given 2 weeks to respond, and when we were questioning why our rights were not acknowledged, the first response was, no right-of-way takings were planned on your property as of the March 16th meeting. And then the response goes on to say that the county regrets that the date when your property was identified as subject to a taking prevented notification. That strikes me as an astonishing lack of either clarity or planning that we were not on the list of takings. And then all of a sudden, we appeared on that list. And I think that this just goes to the questions that other speakers have raised about the entire procedure that we followed here. Thank you.
Hello everyone, hello again, Doug Britton, 155 Warren Road. Hanshaw, obviously, is the topic. As you know, all the alternatives considered for Hanshaw are 30 feet of smooth, continuous asphalt, which is a lot. And this causes drivers to misbehave, and makes for an inhospitable pedestrian environment, and that necessitates a set of sidewalk, which takes land and yards and trees, and what you wind up with is speeding drivers and destruction of character, loss of property, loss of privacy, etc. So other alternatives should have been considered, including better designs that do not require the eminent domain that you are considering. So let's consider some better designs, shall we? Proposal number one on the sheet I passed out is an example. 10-foot lanes, shallow concrete gutters with catch basins and drainage underneath. Then perhaps for colored shoulders beyond. NYSPOD would recognize these as acceptable shoulders, but drivers would see them as sidewalks due to their separation from the asphalt by the gutters and the fact they are different material, different color, and at a different angle. They are not just a continuation of the crown of the road. The shoulders would be usable by bikes and pedestrians, and therefore you would not need a separate sidewalk. And the whole thing, being 31 feet, would fit in between where all the trees and bushes currently are. You wouldn't have to remove anything. Proposal number two, NYSPOD's highway design manual says that 12-foot lanes are sufficient to accommodate mixed vehicular and bicycle traffic on arterials. No shoulder required, as long as you have curving. These are called shared lanes. It is a standard design. You do not need special permission from the state to do it. Adding a 4-foot sidewalk with drainage underneath would make the width 29 feet, which will fit everywhere with no loss of vegetation and no eminent domain. In areas that require drainage facilities on the south side of the road, you can use a curb and catch basin on the north, or you can have a grass swale or space allowance, which is what I have shown on handout. Thank you. Example number three, 10-foot lanes, 1.5-foot shoulders, makes 23 feet of asphalt. Finally, there are a non-standard design, but the 1.5-foot shoulders were recently approved by the state of Forest Home. 23 feet is also wider, little, than Hanshaw currently is in most places, and is wider than Hanshaw is out in the 55-mile-an-hour zone beyond Sandtucker that the county rebuilt recently. And curb and catch basins, the sidewalk on the north, brings it up to 27.5 feet, easily fits, no eminent domain. So what I want you to get out of this is that there are mutually acceptable solutions, I think, that are possible. And what I would advocate is that we talk about it. We should be talking about better designs.
So this is not indicating a procedural process, so I would appreciate it if you dropped the eminent domain power play and we could spend the next 90 days being productive rather than wasting it like the last 90 days on the eminent domain. That's all. Thank you very much.
Thank you. My name is Martin Messing. I live at 110 Blackstone, so I'm not on Hanshaw, I'm not directly impacted by the proposed project. And when I first saw it, I enjoyed the benefits of the sidewalk and the Grange, but as I learned more about the project, I became increasingly uncomfortable with both the project and the way in which it's done. I have studied and worked on issues of eminent domain in the past, and I think that the trend for government bodies at all levels to use it increasingly is a very serious matter for public governance in the United States. We had an important Supreme Court ruling a number of years ago, and as a trickle down effect from the use of eminent domain at the national level for matters of genuine national importance down to local levels for minor road improvements, I think we're really eroding some of the basic rights we enjoy as public citizens. I thought the metaphor that came up earlier in the form of a joke about the tailor was really an act of the form of the process. Two questions were raised were, is it legal, is it ethical? The question that comes foremost to my mind, following those two, is whether it's necessary. If we look at Hanshaw Road below Community Corners, it has the right of way, it has the same traffic lanes we would see in proposed improvements. It has a green space that could accommodate the drainage, and then it has a sidewalk, all within a distance, within the 34 or 35 feet of the existing right-of-way that Hanshaw has from Community Corners to Sapsucker. In other words, we could accomplish virtually all of the road design within the existing right-of-way without any land takings, with less impact on the community, and I think with a nicer project. The question then comes up, why are we doing this? And the reason is simply that we're spending money that the federal government is offering to give us that it doesn't have. 80% of these funds are coming from the federal government, 15% of it's from the state. Neither of these governments are in a position to loan any money right now. They're both deeply indebted and no feasible way of paying off their debts, and our children are all going to bear the burden of those debts. They don't have the money to spend, and neither do we. The project should be scaled down to something within the existing right-of-way that the county already owns, within a budget that they can afford. And it would accomplish the primary goals of this project. I think that the money can be better spent on restoring cuts, the health and welfare program, education. It's more important than a fourth of children inside this room. Thank you.
I've never found just the last person signed up. If anyone else is interested in speaking,
I'm Deborah Cowan, and I live at 1022 Hanshaw Road. Thanks for the facilities to that. I'm uncomfortable, and thank you for your kind attention. I agree with my neighbors that the current eminent domain process is irredeemably flawed by failures to notification and failures to provide complete and accurate information for which property owners can raise issues and objections. I would ask you to vote no to pass the meeting out tonight and schedule another hearing with proper procedure to adjust and hear the homeowners. I have heard that there is some consternation on the part of some legislators about various neighborhood opposition to county roadway plans, including Cottage Road, Warren Road, and now Hanshaw. If I may address this, I believe it is because the process is fundamentally flawed and needs to be more truly collaborative. Currently, we are experiencing government by staff, and that's never going to be.
work. The Highway Division, as talented as they may be, are all about the asphalt. I believe that they have done the best job that they could under the circumstances, but they are engineers and roadworthy people, so their circumstances are defined by the road and traffic. Our circumstances are defined by the livability of our neighborhood. Your job as legislators is to maintain a planning vision to the benefit of all your constituents throughout the county, whether directly in your district or not, and balance particular and neighborhood needs with livability given priority, and to retain and enhance the vibrant and special character of our towns and county. I believe your role as elected representative is to exercise your critical thinking faculties and drop over reliance on staff because you're not highway experts, as Ms. Robertson has reminded us on several occasions. This is true. You are the representatives of the people in a democratic process. We are experts on our road. We should be able working together to create a safer road and preserve the livability of the neighborhood while providing adequate service for the movement and traffic to and from Cornell, community corners, the airport, and existing businesses that are online and shop. Please do not sacrifice this neighborhood in an attempt to facilitate traffic flow by whatever number of seconds it will shave off the trip to Cornell. Once this decision is made, you are not going to be able to put it back. Think about where the road goes. You'll either end up turning down Warren Road, which will bring you to Steep Hill and two one-lane bridges, or you'll continue to be on ice where you will have to slow down at the corners, or you'll turn to Pleasant Grove Road and again hit that one-lane bridge if you haven't scooted onto campus. My point is none of these connecting roadways are highways. They are additional, winding neighborhood roads that don't and aren't meant to take you anywhere fast, but can get you there at reasonable speeds while enjoying the view along the way. Why can't that be enough? Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who would like to address the legislature?
Can I finish my last paragraph?
Well, you have 3 minutes for the motion. All right, thank you very much. I would like to ask staff to staff members to bring us up to date and to also to put some context onto our discussion. Frank, I think I'm just going to stay here. Let's not bother moving that. I think we need to get over there. I think we'll move later. So I'm going to look at the backs of your heads, folks, but I don't see your hands go up. So maybe you don't have to worry about lack of context. First, I think Jonathan would you guys just said that they're in the witness stand now. And of course, the purpose of the microphones is so that it can be recorded and put on our website. And until 6 o'clock, since we're going out on the feed as well, but now we're going to see expanded on the public access and city council. Any kind not made on the microphone really doesn't get picked up for the record. So I'll also just mention that Ed Marks, Commissioner Planning and Public Works, who's been so involved in this project, is out of town tonight.
I guess what I'm going to try to do, maybe not too loud or the opposite, is to just try to explain where we are in terms of procedure. As most of you probably know, in the event that we maintain property by eminent domain, the county is required to follow procedures of the eminent domain procedures law. We do this with regard to every road or widening in the event, which means going through a process. Typically, we don't actually end up taking property by eminent domain because we Well, the thing you can have, we've always worked it out. I've been here within 17 years and we've yet to actually take the property by the road point. But we have many times gone through the process in the event that we may have. So it's a process and it takes a period of time. So when the eminent domain procedures, I'm not talking about necessarily about this particular road. But it goes through a process in the event that you may need to take property or property by eminent domain. The first part of an eminent domain proceeding is the hearing, and the hearing begins with providing notice. We've already talked a little bit about the notice, but we published the notice in the paper. recently the law has changed so that nowadays people who are, well, certain individuals are entitled to personal or certified, your personal service or certified, and those are the people whose property you intend to take by eminent domain. The law also says that inadvertent failure to notify anyone doesn't, it is not jurisdictional, it doesn't affect the title required. So as you know, we did that, we published notice in the paper and served those individuals whose property the county authorities would be taking by eminent domain or not have to take by. Then as you know, we have the hearing. And then the next step is that within 90 days of the hearing, the legislature has to make the findings. The reason I think why we have to have this meeting as a special time is because if we have a regular meeting, the next regular meeting would be 91 days. And as you all know, that there's a longer period of time because of the 3 weeks between the board and the board meetings. So the determination and finding that the legislature makes is it has certain elements. It has to include that the project serves a public use, the approximate location of the project, the reasons for selecting the location, the general effect of the project, and anything else the legislature feels is important to consider. And so that is, of course, what's before you today. In terms of the next step from here, here's a section on, well, what you actually do is you create a synopsis, you adopt the findings, you do a synopsis, that synopsis is published in the paper, and it's also served on individuals who would be affected by it. There's also a synopsis that you send to people, also explains their opportunity to challenge, which essentially says that there are 30 days from publication to challenge, and the challenge goes to the third department, which is the appellate division. The judicial review under law is pretty limited. It's limited to whether the county followed proper procedures and whether it served a public purpose. The findings that we made are actually broader than the subject of judicial review. So that's basically, and then after the notice goes out, and that's typically when an eminent domain proceeding, residents are contacted in what they call negotiation and acquiring the parcels, and of course if that isn't successful, then you would have to actually start an eminent domain proceeding, which is a legal proceeding, which fortunately we don't have to do, but it's certainly possible. There are a couple of issues on this one which came up, which I did want to address. They're basically in 12 and 13 of the proposed findings, but there's some confusion about those things, and I thought I'd try to explain it from our perspective. What happened is, and particularly after the first public hearing, it became clear that there was certain land on some properties that was, for want of a better term, uncertain ownership. I believe John is calling it no man's land, but it's really land of uncertain ownership. And it's not in the majority of the properties, it's on some properties on Henshaw Road. And that is because a residence deed will define the end of their property, and then there'd be a county use, and in some cases we found that there was an area between them. In some cases, of course, people's use went to the middle of the roads, but we found that in some cases there was an area, I think John forgets, no man's land, but an area between the end of the deeds of some property owners and the county's use. So what the county did is decided that
because there is this area, because its ownership is uncertain, it would make sense just to compensate the property owners for it rather than arguing or getting it in and proceeding without details. So in talking about changing the maps, that would just be to show that individuals are going to be compensated for that additional property, which previously hadn't been shown as an area where they'd be compensated. So in other words, some individuals who live along the road would now be compensated for an area greater than they were previously contemplated. One of the important things about the maps, both in the future maps and the current map, is it doesn't really change the actual road or where the road is. It doesn't change the project. It doesn't change where people's houses are. Any revised map would simply show some residents are going to be compensated. So, you know, in terms of the project, if there's not any change in the project, that's what it explains basically in number 12 here. Number 13, what it basically says is as a result of this decision, you compensate people for land which is of questionable ownership. That meant that there were at least 14 property owners who will now be compensated who weren't compensated before. But the project doesn't in any way change. So we decided that, and of course, it's if inadvertent failure to notify them doesn't render the taking ineffective, but the legislature thought it would be a good idea to notify these people who were previously notified and allow them an opportunity to submit written comments to be considered as a part of the record. And I understand only three of those property owners did actually submit written comments, which are part of the record. So that's basically where we are. We're at the point where, and we try to include that in the findings so that people would understand. And there's been a lot of talk about, I think, errors in the maps or maps changing, but that is it's really a change of decision to compensate property owners for more land that would result in any changes. But the important thing is it doesn't change the project. We're not changing the project. So that's where we are now. Legislature needs to vote on the findings, whether up or down. If the legislature adopts the findings, then there's a notice, and then individuals don't like the findings, obviously, change. But as I said, judicial review is somewhat limited in the statute, but the individuals do have a right to change.
Thank you, John. Are there any questions, John? Carol?
Yeah.
You can have to talk to the mic.
John, can you say anything about the changes you referred to, the fairly recent changes in the law
related to eminent domain?
For those of us who may have been involved in eminent domain procedures in the past,
I'm talking to the mic.
For those of us who may have been involved in eminent domain procedures the way the law used to be, can you tell us anything about what changed?
Sure. There are basically two recent changes. One is that property owners whose property that you are contemplating maybe taking should be notified either by personal delivery or by certified mail. That was not there before. What you had to do was publication before. And the second thing was that this notice needed to contain basically, it's a warning that the words are in the statute, and essentially says that if they don't appear at the public hearing and raise issues, they could be prevented from raising them in any future legal action. So those are the things that are new in the words.
Anyone else?
Will?
What would be the practical implications if we fail to stop funding and
Well, we would clearly, well, presumably we'd then go beyond the 90 days. And if we made a future finding, like the legislature made a future finding, we'd have to time. So, in effect, I think that we, the legislature would have to begin the whole process again in order to make a final finding. And now I can't tell you, you know, what necessarily the legal effect of not making a final finding is, but I can tell you that the statute would not.
And this may be a question for you or even for John Lampman. Will we do that? How would that relate to any requirements in terms of the timeline of funding, which loss of funds? Are we in danger of losing the ability to do this project if we start it? If we do not act now?
The process would, we'd have to start the process again as far as notification, publication. That would have to be authorized by committee and legislature. And so we're probably looking at a month at least away before we could have another hearing. Then we would have another period for responding to comments that we receive, establishing determination findings, and so forth. And theoretically, that could be turned around probably quicker than it was this time. But, so it's, I'm trying to run through it in my mind where we are in the calendar. It would be probably possible, but it would be bringing the schedule quite tight because we were also looking at the need to do the appraisals, to do the mapping. If we delay the appraisal and mapping and the negotiation phase of right of way acquisition, then it could be that we would run late enough in the year next year that we would not be able to start to take advantage of next year's construction season very, very well. We wouldn't get much done next year. As far as the funding is concerned, we need to get the construction documents to a place where they can be approved before, I'll say, August of 2011. So that can be done. So I don't think the funding would necessarily be jeopardized. It's more of a schedule issue.
Also, on the scheduling issue, there's a potential for legal challenge that could affect whenever we want to get how long that might take. So it's certainly earlier is certainly better than later. Because in some sense, the schedule could be out of our control.
Any other questions? Frank, then we will. And John and Bill will have a chance about the calendar or the things in general to pull that down to the finishing.
Thanks, Mark. And thanks to the public for coming and commenting. I have a question about the timing. I want to make sure I heard John Lampman correct just now, that the funding would not be jeopardized, the timing of the project, because of having to do whatever we had to do. We're not planning on doing this until next year anyway, but it would make the timing of the project for construction tight. Do I have that correct?
Because Jonathan said that it could be unforeseen and legal delays of legal action, and the drop dead is August 2011 construction drawing, so it's not conceivable that actually push us to get that deadline. Is that right?
I agree with what you just said. Yes, we're adding Jonathan's notation about possible legal challenges that could affect the schedule.
Okay, Jonathan just said, and confirm what I said, the legal challenge could put the letter by the schedule.
if we were to vote to postpone tonight and reopen whatever the process might be, the type of options that Mr. Britton just handed us this evening, I don't know if you've seen those, John, but they were three on that. Would the public be able to participate in a redesign or bring their suggestions to the body whoever was addressing the redesign of the project? Would there be an opportunity for that?
I think Bill will be better to answer that question. Let's finish with the questions for Jonathan.
Okay, can you remember that question?
Was there something else for Jonathan? Cool, yeah.
Maps and drawings have taken on tremendous importance of all the comments and discussions that we've been having and hearing. And I guess I would like to hear a clearer, simpler statement of what use the maps that have been circulated actually serve. Because it's my understanding that the maps are really important, the individual property maps are really important at the time of individual property owner visits, when temporary easements are under consideration and permanent easements are under consideration. And that's different from the eminent domain use of maps, which doesn't seem to be the real part of what we're being asked to do, which is decide whether the project as a whole will serve a public purpose. And since I think maps can be changed during the more detailed design development and the reaction to some of the changes in our finding statements, where do we come from? I would like to have a clear statement about how important the maps are to people are covered by.
I mean, your point is essentially correct. I mean, there are two types of maps. There's basically maps of the project, and then there's individual maps with regard to what the county is contemplating and compensating people for and individual properties. Actually, with the eminent domain procedures one, in practicality, often those maps aren't prepared until after this proceeding, or after one goes forward with an eminent domain or the project. Essentially what is reviewed at this stage is the project. And that really hasn't changed on the map. Those maps of individual property and what the county is compensating individual property owners for really, I think, takes on great significance later on when property owners are approached and the county's talks and the county's representative talks and negotiate as to what they will be compensated for, and discussion as to what is appropriate, and in fact any dispute as to what should be compensated for. But right now the real book is actually at the project. Individual property owners and individual, what might be taken or what the county is going to compensate for with regard to a particular individual property is really not what is being looked at here. If those maps need to be prepared and need to be brought to the property owners and negotiated with the property owners, but the real maps that I think the legislature should be looking at now is the map of the project, how the project affects people's properties.
Okay,
sort of.
I'm just, by number says there's a follow up, am I right? No, okay, Peter.
Just to reiterate, I'd like to put it in my own words and see if I'm right, gentlemen. It struck me, at least my understanding, is that the essential right that a property owner has is the right to lodge a claim against the project. That the point of the notification is so that it can preserve a legal right to challenge whatever the project, the reimbursement, or something like that. And it does seem to me that it's very hard to believe that after all the various notifications that we've gone through, that there is any property owner who does not know what it is that the county has in mind. And having said that, I don't really understand what would be gained by having another set of findings. In a practical way, I mean, theoretically, somebody could say something and I have an epiphany. I see the whole thing, but I have heard a lot of arguments from a lot of people and read a lot of complaints that people have made. And speaking practically, I just find it inconceivable that I could learn some new thing that I don't know already from having read and studied that to justify the kind of delay that we're talking about and to justify the possibility of making the whole project impossible. I was moved by the statement that was said that you can't trample over the rights of a landowner. I accept that, but as far as I see that we haven't trampled over the rights in our successive attempts to notify people and explain what's going on. Perhaps I didn't say the right words, but that's my understanding of the situation.
Yeah, I couldn't disagree with that.
I guess the second gun that I have some reservations about the potential of going back and trying to redesign the process, such as Frank is asking questions about it, is because if they look at the proposal in front of us, it appears that there have been at least four different alternatives that have already been considered, including alternatives that would not make any changes at all except to do routine maintenance in the road. So it would appear that there has been a serious attempt to consider various alternatives as this process has gone forward. And as I look at the proposals that we were handed tonight, although I'm like anybody else, if I were going to have a project up out in front of my house or property, it's racking my brain to come up with alternatives that would be more acceptable to me. But I can't help but notice, for instance, that in proposal number one, there are only 10-foot wide lanes. 10-foot? It's really very narrow lanes. It's not even about the width of the vehicle. Vehicles, speeds are, it certainly doesn't seem to me that is very advisable. Now, I'm not a traffic engineer, so that's just my opinion. Proposal number two has 12-foot wide lanes. Proposal number three, we're back to the 10-foot wide lanes again. But I do also notice in all three proposals, proposal number one doesn't include a sidewalk. But proposal number two and three includes a sidewalk 4 feet wide. Now, having worked with people with disabilities and with the Americans with Disabilities Act, one of the things that I'm aware of is that we need to have at least 5 foot wide sidewalks in order to accommodate people with disabilities, and I think that's actually written into the ADA. So, although it may seem theoretically that there might be a lot of other design possibilities out there, I find it not practical, really, to think that by going back and trying to redo the design, that we could come up with something substantially better than the design we've already been picked.
So before you go, was there a question in there for Jonathan? Okay. If I could just make a comment before Julie's question about that, and about this question of is the
design set in stone. L. Seller Road is Rhode Underground, and it's due to be constructed starting in July. This morning, John and I met my husband and me, at our driveway, and we went over, where the culvert was going to be, and shouldn't it be a guardrail, and was the center line going to move this way or that way, and which part of the ditch was going to be enclosed. And although he swears he remembers everything, he thinks, no, it's not, I'm sure he will remember that as of this morning, June 30th, for a project that's going to start in July, John was quite ready to say, yeah, I think we can do that, and we can move that over there, and I think we'll go back and look at the culvert, and maybe we do a whole number of adjustments that we think that you can only tell standing at the road, and as late as 2.5 weeks before the project is about to start, John is here to be talking to neighbors about that kind of detail. And I've been assured that that's part of the process going forward, and that's why I'm concerned about the maps. And the individual property maps may still change, and even sort of at the point of construction, things can change that badly. I've heard many other county residents that they've had that experience with their staff. The point about what happens at an individual property level is not the subject, as I understand, of tonight's meeting and vote of the overall project. But in fact, the overall project still can have adjustments to it.
Martha, did you ask the questions for John Wood before you need for these questions for any of us there?
For Jonathan especially, and then Bill's going to put that to the side of me.
Okay, Johnny, I'm recalling Larry Adams' comments tonight that three of the 14 people who were only recently notified that the county had some interest in using some of the property, only three people turned in comments, and she asked whether we had better and consider getting responses. And what I need to know from John Wood is whether I had received those as part of the packet and did not recognize them as such. I'm not sure I've read the comments that were taken by the city. And if I haven't received them yet, does that affect my ability to vote on something I think it might?
The answer is, because I checked with John that same question today, the answer is yes. And when they get up there, they can tell you what numbers they are. But the answer is yes.
Thank you.
Have you
ever thought, Frank?
This is a Jonathan Wood question. And I'm not on the facilities committee, so this may have already been discussed in the facility, so I apologize for putting you on the spot right now. Most of these folks that came tonight are talking about the eminent domain and some nuances. I don't mean to sound glib, but some nuances associated with it. John, this is going to be, the question's easy, the answer's not going to be so easy. Is there any way for us to avoid an eminent domain proceeding?
There is, well, a meaning proceeding.
A taking by eminent domain on this point.
Well, look at it this way. I think you're 17 and a half years and we've done a lot of roads and we've never yet had to do that. Because typically, like Martha says, John and the staff and sometimes they go out and meet with individual property owners and make accommodation, and we've always worked it out. That doesn't mean we'll necessarily work it out in this case with every property owner, but we always have in the past. We've had, gone through this process before several times, never with so many people, et cetera, but we've gone through the process many times, but we've never had to actually do a taking because they do go out and they work it out and they work out both financially, but oftentimes residents are more concerned about, particular aspects of trees and shrubs rather than, ditching, rather than money, but we've always worked it out. So, and I can guarantee guarantee that every single one will work out here, but the track record is good. Okay.
Yeah, I need to understand better what that colloquy was between Frank and John. By eminent domain, do you mean going to court, or do you mean getting the land that we needed land for a project and we acquired that land?
By eminent domain, an eminent domain proceeding under law begins when the county files a petition seeking to take someone's property by eminent domain.
So have we done that? Is that what we're doing?
No, we've never done that, is what I'm saying. This is a prerequisite to do that, but in the past we've always worked it out where we did not have to do that. I can't ever guarantee in any case like this one that that will happen here. We've never had to go through the process where we begin an actual eminent domain proceeding, which is filing a petition or the over mylar, the map, with a court and seeking to take property land.
And it's conceivable that we will be able to do that here, right?
Well, I would hope so. I mean, I can't speak for everybody, but I would hope so.
But that
would
clearly compensate the people.
Yeah.
It's not that we're not...
I understand.
Yeah. I'm still really bothered by this process state now requires that people receive a letter that seems to imply speak now or forever hold your peace, that seems to imply that this is the last point of contact and their land is going to be taken. And I hear you that this was a letter that was required. Is that my understanding correct that that's what we were required to do and that's what we've done? And I think the state had a purpose to that, that they don't want us to be able to establish the prerequisites for eminent domain without making very certain that people know and are all notified in no uncertain terms that that is what this could lead to in the future. But I don't know if it's a legal question in here. Whether there's some way we can.
I can answer it in that statute.
Say this in plainer language.
In that statute says the notice shall say, and then it says an exact word what the notice shall say. So you put that in the notice. Whether that, it basically tells property owners that if they don't raise objections at the eminent domain proceeding or the hearing, then they could lose their right to raise them in a later judicial review. Personally, I don't know why that should be true at all, but that's what the law is and that's what the notice has to say.
I found a list of things that the New York State does that we don't understand or agree with. That's yet very long, that we don't only have the budget passed. So this is just another one of those. So thank you, everybody else. Well.
John, I've heard what you said about our history and our desire to work with people, and I honestly believe that is our intent and that we will work very hard. But what we're being asked to do tonight is basically give you a tool that makes that possible. And I can't get out of my brain the famous quote by Teddy Roosevelt, who is self-aware very quickly as well. And it seems that domain is the effect of this clash. It may be, in fact, justified and necessary. That's what we're being asked to do tonight. And then once you have that code, people know as they're negotiating with us that if they can't come to an agreement, we can't get it. Is that an accurate portrayal of our situation?
Yeah, I would disagree with that. I can't disagree.
Okay. Well said, I'd like to ask, thank you very much, John. Bill Stephanie, I would imagine, would like to give some
timing here of the project and the calendar for the next 12 months?
Hi, I'm Bill Sisson, the County Highway Manager. The Hampshire Road Reconstruction Project began in 1999, and it's taken until 2005 to begin the initial design, preliminary design. Now, since the project began, we've had four informational meetings, preliminary design, and basically, we've listened to everyone's comments, and we fine-tuned the design to a point where we're going to minimize the impact on everyone's property. Now, the next step that we're going to have is certified right-of-way professionals will be meeting with the property owners with a map, basically showing them we're going to be taking this strip of land, or we're not taking anything. If this bush, you want this bush retained, we'll either retain the bush or we'll replace it. Now, this is part of the negotiations for the easement, be it a permanent easement or temporary easement. Okay, you're compensated. The right-of-way professionals, basically, this is what they do. They move from project to project, and then they assess the value of the land that we need to move the highway project. Now, it's interesting that, you know, with highway right-of-way, if there's a healthy tree, the property owner owns it. Well, the same tree, 10 years later, it dies. Suddenly, the highway department owns it because it's within the highway right-of-way. And the property owner realizes it's going to cost $1,500 to remove. You know, one of the things that when you have negotiations, personally, when you have negotiations with the professional right-of-way person, okay, you're gonna be right in your yard. They're gonna show you what is going to be done in your property. Now, when you make a deal. Okay, and the easement becomes certified. Okay, that's not the end of it, because when we start construction, the EIC engineer in charge is out on the project, and people do what John was doing with Martha, basically adjusting the project in the field. I mean, it's not really continued negotiations. But as it gets laid out, you can see more of the impact. And the EIC of the project does have a little bit of wiggle room to make some changes. You know, the one thing that Jonathan mentioned, that in his 17 years with the county here, okay, they've negotiated thousands of easements, permanent and temporary. And they have not gone to eminent domain in any case. I've been involved in highway design, construction for, well, 30 plus years, leave it at that. And I've yet to ever go to eminent domain on a highway project. It's just something that I've never done. In the history in the county here, it's never been done. So I don't anticipate us going that route at all. The construction schedule that we have, we're looking at late August to complete the right-of-way maps. Now, in mid-September, we're going to sit down and have a public meeting where we'll have the final maps and be able to go over it with you at this public meeting. Then in mid-November, the appraisal process will hopefully be completed. Then after that, the right-of-way purchase offers happen in December. Now, May of 2011, we have to have the right-of-way certified with the DOT. Now, projects cannot move forward until we have the federal certification of the right-of-way. Then, when that happens in May of 2011, we're going to basically put the project construction meeting with the public. Now, we're looking at probably late 2011 for construction to begin, or August, beginning of August. Now, you know, to bring this project from an idea to construction, at that point, is going to take 12 years. So it's quite an arduous process. That's the kind of construction schedule that we've got, and you know, we anticipate working with people rather than against people.
Thank you very much, Bill. Frank, you want to pick up the question you had before?
I think you may have answered it, Bill, about that if there was a delay.
Microphone.
Thanks. All about the alternate plan.
You said, would the public be able to participate?
Yes, would the public be able to participate in any redesign and the restriction we just did is as we go through not just the next several months, but even into the early part of next year. The tweaking that can go on, or sometimes it's relatively major, the public would have an opportunity, even if it's individual by individual, they would have an opportunity to participate.
Most definitely. Currently, we have the Warren Road construction project underway, and the EIC meets almost daily with people, telling them what the next construction phase, how it's going to impact them. And they do many modifications. That's one of the reasons that when we finish a construction project, we have a record as-built plans to make sure that it's, you know, that the plans reflect not the design, but how it was actually constructed.
Thanks.
Any other questions for Bill?
Well. No, I am. I fully expect that we would be very good about dealing with individual landowners and having something to tweak. I guess what I'm wondering is what room there exists if we accept the we vote tonight that there's a the unpublished purpose and that we move ahead. What room exists for considering seriously some of the design alternatives that have been proposed by neighbors that are different from the further choice that we have set?
Well, one of the proposed proposals to the alternative was the design was to have a 24 feet pavement, basically two 12 foot lanes and then have curves. The problem with that is it's in the Interstate Design Manual. But according to the designers that I talked to up in Syracuse, they don't construct roads like that. So
that would, for example, would it be possible to reconsider the width of the driving lane? Could we make that smaller within?
Really, what we're looking at right now is we're looking at 11-foot driving lanes and 4-foot shoulders, and that's really pretty much the minimum standard that the feds will allow us to go. We've gone over this a couple of times over the last couple of years with federal people.
And the driving lanes are now 11 feet, right?
Yes.
Anything else for Bill? Thank you much, Bill. John, did you want to have anything to add to the neighbors, John? You don't have to. All right, thank you. Now, I think the next step, I will turn this over to the chair of the Facilities and Infrastructure Committee.
When will the comments from the three comments received from the people who were notified only recently be pointed out to us? Because I'd like to read them.
I believe, did we hand it out, John? They're on the ordinance are on page 19
the new really hates the new rent rules. They only want the next year of 16 and 18.
Pages 16 to 19.
Does everybody have a problem? John, as I read over the earlier set, there's a lot of repetition and comments and responses. Is there anything particular in the new set to point out? That, especially in this general applicability to the whole project?
Why don't you address the lack of notification that people have seen? And, for instance, the first one on page 16 talks about having, as a result of that, to request a new hearing. But most of the rest of the comments have been addressed in other pages.
Thank you, John. Any questions about that? Anything else?
I haven't quite finished scanning. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Thank you.
So again, I would point out that this is that we're in at this point because John just received the deadline was ordinary category last Thursday, the 24th, John made an attempt to compile and respond to the comments. And so that's why we're looking at the it's great theater to watch people read. Peter, is your hand up?
Yeah, I saw. I think a new comment. Somebody stated that they would have preferred to have the opportunity to talk to Cornell about its interests, see if they couldn't change their mind. I don't think that's what I asked for. That's Hillary Acker.
Here's the response.
We
heard that
account is
failure
when we set
up
the committee.
Did we? Okay. All right.
Well, Mark, I would actually like to request a 3-minute recess so we can read these, look over these comments and see if there's anything.
Well, I think that's a reasonable idea, but I'd like to make that 10 minutes. I think we can do this in 10 minutes.
I don't see that.
Let's do 15 minutes.